Einen wunderschönen guten Tag, liebe Gemeinde. Hier ist der Ingo von den Donuts. Was hat denn der jetzt schon wieder einen Podcast? Das ist ja fürchterlich, werden jetzt die meisten fragen. Und richtigerweise ist das natürlich auch eine berechtigte Frage. Aber wenn mein guter Freund Euse von Endhits Records mich fragt, ob ich nicht einen Podcast hosten will für Endhits Records in 5 Episoden, dann mache ich das natürlich absolut sehr, sehr gerne. Das ist ein Freundschaftsdienst, das ist aber auch eine absolute Überzeugungstat. Denn Endhits Records ist ein ganz, ganz, ganz tolles Indie-Label aus Bayern. Der Euse wohnt mittlerweile irgendwo in Portland, Oregon, glaube ich, und bringt unglaublich tolle Künstler raus, auf eigenes Risiko, möchte ich meinen. Im Februar, nämlich Mitte Februar, ab dem 14.02. gibt es die Endhits Records Tour mit unter anderem Nathan Gray von Boyz II Fire, mit Swain, mit Norbert Buchmacher und dem famosen Matze Rossi. Wir möchten auf diesem Podcast hier ein bisschen mehr über die Künstler rausfinden. Natürlich auch über die Personen hinter den Künstlern. Und ich möchte euch als allererstes bitten, das Ganze bitte auch zu abonnieren, diese 5 Episoden, bei Spotify, Apple, Deezer, Podigy, wo auch immer ihr gerade zuhört. Wenn euch so Sachen interessieren wie, ist der Misfit-Skull wirklich das Wandtattoo der Punk-Szene? Ist es wichtiger, in der Grundschule das ABC oder das DIY zu lernen? Oder welches ist eigentlich das beste Album der Insane Clown Posse? Aber das alles finden wir raus. Denn jetzt haben wir jemanden in der Leitung, den Headliner der Endhits Records Tour of Boyz II Fire Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Nathan Gray. Hey Nathan, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Not too shabby. Can I make an educated guess? I'm doing way better than you because it's 6 in the morning where you're at, right?
Oh yeah, you are well past where I'm at right now. I woke up maybe about a half an hour ago.
Right so, on.
I'm good. I've got coffee. I'm set to go. I get up early anyway, so I'm up.
Brilliant.
I've had breakfast. I've had my I'm in the process of having my coffee, so I'm good.
Cool, man. All right, let's kick this off and let's find out a bit about you, a bit about your new album, a bit about everything surrounding the Endhits Records tour and whatnot.
Let's do it.
Let's take a little time travel first. Can you remember the first protest song you have heard in your life?
Let's see. I would say that the first one I heard that made an impact on me very hard was Simon and Garfunkel's He Was My Brother, which was a song detailing freedom riders that had gone down to help in the segregated South and had been killed, trying to help black people vote and working towards civil rights, and they had been killed, and the song made a huge impact on me when I was a kid.
I see. So what was your childhood like anyway? I mean, judging from your artistic output and the stuff you share on social networks and all, you always seem to wear your heart on the sleeve. Would you consider yourself a troublemaker as a kid?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. You could speak to my parents about that. and every school I went to. Yeah. Without a doubt. I would say, it's funny because I was a troublemaker, and at the same time I had, you know, some very, you know, I don't know if we want to get this deep in the beginning of this interview, but had some issues leading up to in my childhood, which made me very angry as a kid. And so the mix of the two didn't work out very well for my school life. And I'm sure it was very frustrating for my parents for a very long time.
I see. Did you have a lot of friends, or were you rather an outsider, like considered even like a freak?
Yeah, that was more like it. I mean, I would say back in the late 80s, early 90s, of my high school years, being punk and stuff like that, it's not like it is now. You know, I don't want to be that old guy that like, oh, you don't get it, back in the day it was so hard. It was fine, but it was just different, you know?
Right.
And to be that outsider, and then also at the same time, probably like it always is, like in today's times, even when you have sort of those outsider cliques, it's even hard to find your place within those, you know? So I found it very difficult. And I usually used I feel like as a kid, a lot of trying to be the funny guy, you know what I mean? To get into those situations. And it usually just got me in a lot of trouble, but.
Right on. I see. But so,
and I think that's also where I found like sort of my more political and social ideologies, because I went to the library a lot by myself and I found old books by Abby Hoffman or Bakunin or, you know, different political figures, mostly leftist, which definitely inspired me as a child and as sort of a loner to find my anger and to find, you know, something to direct. You know,
how were you feeling when that happened? Like when you were exposed to those books in the first place?
Well, I think that, so it all started with music, like I was saying, with that song. And that started very early, like probably around 10. But then through music, then finding reading material to go along with that music, probably wasn't until early high school, like 9th, 10th grade.
So you were, so it started with music and then you got exposed to those books.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that was around, I'd say like 9th or 10th grade that I found those books in like the school library and stuff like that.
So,
which I'm sure if they would have known some of those books were in the library, they would have been like, oh, we can't have these here. But, you know.
So how did you get into punk rock and hardcore then in the first place? What got you interested in the scene and the music?
I would say it was a big portion of me getting into that style of music started with my cousin, Chris, who was living in Florida at the time. And, I had started getting into skateboarding and he and his, and my other cousin, his sister, they were into punk and hardcore and they kept sending me music.
Like what?
As usually happens. Like, let's see, Minor Threat, Black Flag, Dead Kennedys, Code of Honor. Mm-hmm. And there was an Alternative Tentacles compilation called Let Them Eat Jelly Beans that they sent me that I remember. But it all went from there. And then I had a couple of friends at school or like older, it was always like older kids, you know what I mean? That were into that always sort of passed it down, which, you know, thankfully for them.
Right.
Because it was like, it was an epiphany when I heard it, you know? So from there, then I started, finding Bad Religion, Bad Brains, and then got into some, you know, some of the straight edge hardcore stuff like Bold and Gorilla Biscuits and stuff like that. So,
you're mentioning a lot of those classics that still resonate with people today. Are those records still with you? Do you still listen to them? Basis?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I listen to Start Today almost like every other day.
Right.
Like that album, like the positivity behind that album and the message behind it and just that melodic hardcore and melodic punk genre is very important to me. It's always been a big thing for me. Like when I found, like there were some punk and hardcore things that I had found that I was like, am I really into this? I don't know. It's like, But then when I found like Bad Religion and stuff like that, it was like, oh, okay, I get it now. There's a hook here. There's it's catchy. It's like, you know.
See, and same thing that really happened to me with No Control. No Control was a game changer for me. When I first got exposed to that one, I couldn't believe it. It hit me like a freight train. I was a metal kid before that, and all of a sudden there's a band that narrows down the same amount of energy to like a minute, you know, and not like nine minutes song with like seven solos in there.
Right. Right, get in, get out.
Yeah, like,
it was awesome. It was Suffer for me was the first one.
Right on.
And it blew my mind. Yeah. Like I was just like, wow. It was really funny. I actually found Suffer by Bad Religion and Only Theater of Pain by Christian Death on the same time. It was always weird. Like I always like I was always listening to weird things at the same time like that. And I remember I had Black Flag in my head and the first Violent Femmes album.
Right.
That I was listening to a lot together. You know what I mean? It was always like that. Like, I'd always find things, like really weird things within the same genre per se, but not really similar. And I would always just get locked in on like those two or three albums for a little while.
Right. Must have been like, had like quite an impact on you, like when starting out with your first bands. Can you remember your first band, like school band experiments and like experiences
oh, yeah.
and all?
Oh,
what kind of stuff did you guys do?
Let's see. Well, my first band that I started when I went to Woodham High School in 10th grade was called Subculture, and we did absolutely fuck all. We did nothing. It was me and my friend Bart, and we got together in my kitchen and we listened to The Exploited. And that was about it. You know what I mean?
It's a great concept. Like, you could go on tour with that.
Yeah. Right. You just sit around and listen to The Exploited. It's great. I think it was like The Exploited, GBH, and some of those like crossover punk metal bands we'd just sit around and listen to. But that was it. And then after that, I think it was like in my 11th or 12th grade area, I met some guys skateboarding and with some guys in Florida where I lived. And they had a band and they were rehearsing and they had a singer who was absolutely awful. And I remember, great guy. I still get in touch with him sometimes. But his name was Chad, and he was not a singer. And I remember being like, oh, I want to be in a band so bad. And they were like, well, why don't you try out? Because he's not really working out. Like, and I remember my tryout was singing "Mother" by Danzig.
Right.
And it was history from there. And we, it was called, at first it was called Second Nature. And then we changed it to Jackanoose, which was spelled all weird. And I don't know why we chose that name. We just wanted a nonsensical name.
Okay.
But, we played several shows in Florida at a place called the Night Owl. That was it was a local club, which funny enough, my friend Gus, who used to do all the punk and hardcore shows there. He did the punk and hardcore like radio show for the college and stuff, or the local radio station and all that stuff. He now went on to tour manage for Foo Fighters.
Oh, I see.
So every once in a while, I'll run into him. Like I remember Boy Sets Fire play with Foo Fighters in Germany. And I walked past the door and I was like, whoa, Gus. He's like, Nathan, oh my God. Like it was... Very cool. So,
yeah, world's a tiny village at times.
yeah, right.
Say that for sure. So, like, but did you always know that you had it in you? Like, when it comes to singing and screaming and all.
Oh yeah, I mean, without a doubt. Much to my parents' dismay, they're like, "Well, what do you want to do with your life? I want to be in a band." No, that's no parent wants to hear that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Even if they want to be supportive, they're like, but how are you going to pay the bills? You know, I don't know. I'm just going to be awesome. Like, it was funny because that, so after that, we moved back up north and I formed a couple of bands even after that. It's funny. There's a guy that does a Delaware hardcore, thing on Instagram. And I always see flyers of like my old band that was called Nine and some old Boy Sets Fire stuff and stuff. It's always, it's funny. But yeah, basically my first band, before Nine, Chad from Boy Sets Fire and I in high school, it was my last year of high school. I moved my last year of high school from Florida back up to Maryland. And I met Chad. And we started a band called Jones Chapel. And it was me, him, and a couple of guys in our school. And it all started with us doing covers, once again, of, I think we did Queensryche and Jane's Addiction. Nice. And a couple of things like that. And we started playing shows. And it was funny because... Jones Chapel was very like, cause Chad was a very tech type of guy at the time. He was a big metal head and I was the punk kid and we sort of meshed and we just got along famously for some reason. I don't know why, but, it's been great ever since. He literally lives next door to me. So, so we formed this band, and it was this very like, almost like Voivod-ish like sort of thing. Like, and it was like in all weird time signatures and all this kind of crazy shit. And, during that time was when I introduced Chad and Josh to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chad and I were playing shows, and Josh was in another band, and I even played in a band with Josh for a little bit on another. It's crazy. It's like I played a lot of bands in this area.
I figure. So,
but it was funny because it was normally always like me and Josh, or me and Chad, or me and like somebody that was in Boy Sets Fire trying to figure out how we fit together, you know? Mm-hmm. And then finally, I moved away for a little bit. And I guess like me and Chad and Josh and stuff, we didn't talk for a little while. And I remember I was in a band called Nine that I wasn't super happy with.
Mm-hmm.
And Chad and Josh had been hanging out a lot because they married sisters.
Oh, I see.
So they ended up hanging out a lot, and they got in touch with me and like, hey, look, we're going to start a band. Do you want to do this? I was like, absolutely. I'll quit this band right now. Let's do it. And that's how Boy Sets Fire got started.
I see. Right on. Well, that's interesting. Yep. Now, you've come a long way artistically, and you seem to have a gigantic output. You obviously have Boy Sets Fire. You have the casting out, your solo stuff. Are you familiar with the concept of sleep at all? Do you sleep? I mean...
No. Come on. What in the world is that? I got about an hour of that earlier. That was... I only need a little bit to recharge the battery, you know?
Because sleep is a new trend in Germany. You should really try it out sometime. It's really cool.
I hear about it, but I'm not so sure yet. I don't know. You know, it's new, it's weird, and you know, new and weird things scare me, so I don't.
Now, Nathan, how is it you are so creative? Why? What keeps you going after all those years? I mean, is there ever a point where you sit back and think, I've probably said it all?
No. And I guess that's an issue. I don't know. It's funny, like whether it's doing interviews or it's doing music or whatever related to music, I definitely have a problem where I just have to keep moving. And it's funny, I'm putting out a book called Light and Love that will be sort of not as much as a companion as my last book was with the other album, but it'll come out with the new album.
Right.
And it sort of speaks to this. And I think that for a long time, as I was saying earlier, some of the more darker things from my past that created who I am today, and what created a lot of the defense mechanisms even that I've dealt with in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that was one of them for a while.
Okay.
And it had been for so long that now that I've gotten more in control and more in touch with those issues and have found healing and you know, a new path for them, I found that, yeah, it's funny because when you go through something like that, you have to sort of dissect what's really you and what is just sort of a cover up. What are you doing to not have to deal with certain things?
Yeah.
You know? And I think that I did use it like that for a while, where it's like, if I keep busy, I don't have to think about these horrible things. I don't have to internalize them. I don't have to get them dealt with. But at the same time, now that I've gotten through that and all of that, it's I've found that this is just part of me now.
I see.
I am a creative person. I am a person that has to keep moving and doing things and doing new things and reinventing how I do those things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think also it came to a point trying to find where I belonged. You know,
right.
I've been trying to do this solo thing forever with the casting out and things like that. And it finally, you know, Nathan Gray Collective, things like that, trying to figure out who I was and what I was as a solo artist and as a person. And now I'm finally at that point. And now it's funny because it's not so much driving to cover up as much as it is driving because I'm excited in what I've found.
Right. I mean, so there's artists out there who put out a new album like every 4 years and they don't tour much, but you seem to be all over the place. Like, do you have any idea how many shows you've played up to this point?
I have zero idea. I will tell you, though, that I've found looking back and sort of indexing my past, finding that it's like, oh my God, like I'll find years where I've done about 6 years worth of things within that year, you know? And again, I talk about that in the book, just like, oh my God, that was all in 1 year. Holy crap. You know? And I don't even notice it sometimes, you know, that I'm doing that much. But then I get to the end of that year and I sort of, okay, what have I done this year? Oh my God. Right. That was all this year. Okay.
Right on. But do you have any downtime at all? What do you do when you're being at home? Like, do you have family and kids? Like, describe a typical day in the life of Nathan Gray.
Yeah. Typical day is definitely not waking up at 6 o'clock and getting on a podcast.
I reckon, yeah.
It is. Yeah. I actually had to set up last night in my son's room so I didn't wake up everybody, but it sounds like I probably did regardless. I have a wife and I have three kids, but my oldest doesn't live here. He's 26 years old, so he's not around here.
Right,
so, I have a 6-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter.
Nice.
And usually my mornings, I wake up and my wife is getting ready for work. We're getting the kids fed. We're getting, you know, everything done in that way. She'll go to work and then I get the kids and I'll drop off Sophie, my daughter, with her grandmother who watches her during the day. And then I'll take Alex to school. He's in first grade right now, which is great because his school is right down the street. So we usually walk to school
nice.
Together, which is a lot of fun.
Cool.
And but that's usually my day. Then I come home and I get to work. And usually that entails, you know, figuring out planning for the release of albums, interviews, things of that nature. And then sitting down and taking time to practice songs, write songs. You know, it's funny cause I have an album that hasn't come out yet and I've already written about 30 songs for the next
one. Holy shit. You know?
Yeah. So it's, I take a lot of time to really delve into what I do.
Right on.
Let's talk about
songwriting for a while. How do you approach songwriting for your solo stuff in comparison to, say, the Boss's Fire stuff? Do you think you get more open to the other ideas in the course of time and try out new stuff?
Yeah, I think it's funny because it's a completely different situation because with Boy Sets Fire, you have like, I would say like Chad or Robert or Josh or someone will go, here's part of a song. Mm-hmm. And then we'll all sort of help each other write it. You know what I mean? But with this, it's sort of awesome because it just works completely off of my creativity, which is, I'm sure, sort of annoying for others sometimes because I'll be at home and in the middle of something and I'll have to run upstairs and write something real quick, which is usually how it works. Anything I do, but it's cool because I have that freedom to do that. I don't have to check with other people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, here, I wrote this part of a thing. And yet, with a band, you have to be careful because you don't want to fully write a song because people are like, oh, you already fully wrote it? Well, what's my part then? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
In this writing situation. And it gets weird, you know? But with me, you know, I can go up and I can either, if I'm feeling inspired, I can just write the whole thing, or I can just, I've got this one thing that keeps going on in my head. Here's the chorus of it. And I put it into my phone and I save it for later, you know?
Right on.
Or I'll go up and I'll turn Logic on and I'll do all the tracks. You know what I mean? It just depends on where I'm at and how inspired I'm feeling.
Right. So do you enjoy doing things completely on your own? I mean, are you good at planning everything by yourself? Do you like ever have the fear that you might get too much of a tunnel vision when writing on your own, not capable of like taking a step back and shit?
No, because that's what I do later. I'm always very careful with that kind of thing, because what I do, like I said, I'll write for an album of, let's say, 12 to 13 songs. I will have written about 30 songs to get to that point. I am a big believer in overwriting and then drawing back.
Right.
So you get 30 songs and then the process starts. So I'll go in and I'll start tearing through them and going, eh, that one's not good enough. It's funny, like sometimes I'll wait till I'm in sort of a bad mood to go through songs because that helps me get rid of them. You know what I mean? And notice when something isn't good enough. And then the process is, okay, well, let me write on the ones that I like a little bit more. So let's say I knock it down to about 20 songs. Then after that process happens, I start sending it out to people who I trust, like Oizy, like Pete, who does my recording from Bouncing Souls. Friends like that, that know music, that are into music, that I can send to and I know will give me an honest response.
Okay.
You know, like, oh, that's great, but maybe, or even Ben, who plays a lot with me on the European tours. And he plays with Sisters of Mercy. Like, I always try to get other musicians to just sort of guide me, not to necessarily help me write, because at the end of the day, I really need to have this where I do everything. You know, I've never had that before, and I've always chickened out from doing it. And when I put something out, I want to make sure that it is truly me, what I'm putting out, and not someone else helping me write. But at that same time, I do want to be open for that input, where people can be like, eh, you should maybe change this, without telling me exactly what I should change it to.
Okay.
Just sort of like, eh, maybe a little bit more in this direction. You know, so I definitely use checks and balances, you know.
Right.
But
so how much, at the end
of the day, yeah.
Right. How much Nathan Gray is Working Title then? The new album's called Working Title. Like, how close to yourself are you on that very record?
The writing is 100%.
Nice.
Without a doubt. Absolutely. It's the first thing. Working Title is the first album that I can say without stopping myself and having to think, 100% written by me.
Okay. So what sets
it
apart?
Which is a beautiful feeling.
What sets it apart from older material?
What sets it apart from older material? You mean just like Feral Hymns, like the other album?
Well, I mean, I mean, everything that you've done up to this point. I mean, there's got to be, I mean, to me, artistically, I always try to, you know, tread new waters and find new ways of finding my sound and improving on myself and blah, blah, blah. Must be the same thing for you, just so you not get stuck in your own gears and all. So, in comparison to the older stuff, what would you think is the accomplishment of this album?
The accomplishment of this is going back to what I knew was right and nailing it. And what I mean by that is, when I started the casting out, it was supposed to be this. And I chickened out. I was not ready. I was nervous about putting out something that just had my name on it.
Yeah.
I wasn't confident in myself. I didn't believe in myself in any way, shape, form, or idea. So I kept getting people around me to help me with this band, to do things better than I thought I could. And so with the casting out, I wrote a lot of it, but then I would give it to other musicians to make it better, you know? And at the end of the day, it wasn't complete. This is a return to that era.
Right.
And that this is a return to that, what I knew I was supposed to be doing, and what I loved, and what was a huge deal for me. Like, the casting out is still probably one of my favorite projects I've ever done, because it was the closest to me I've ever been. You know, so bringing it back to that now, but doing it 100% on my own, is just brilliant to me. I love it.
Awesome. Yeah, and congratulations on the album. I've listened to it a couple of times now, and I think there's an enormous, like, deepness in there, and, like, you know, songs are very, it's pretty shaped, like you have it's not rough around the edges. It's one has the idea, or like the impression, that you've been thinking about those songs a whole lot.
Yes, it was very purposeful. I was very purposeful about which songs made it to the album. I was very purposeful about where they landed in the album, the dynamics of the album, the everything. Right. Every little bit of it was very important to me, how I set it up.
Nice. And yeah, and nicely done. So Chuck Reagan Thank is you. Singing a backup vocals on that one track. How did that come about? Mm-hmm.
It was actually really funny because Wheezy got in touch with me and we were talking about the song Working Title, and he was like, you know what would be really awesome on that song? I was like, I already know what you're going to say. Like, we read each other's minds sometimes. Like, the song has this sort of bounce to it that just screams Chuck.
Yeah.
So like, oh, yeah. And we were like, almost at the same time, I was like, I know what you're going to say. Yeah. Let's call him. You know what I mean? And I remember Oisey sent out an email, but Chuck's terrible at email. So I just texted him and was just like, hey man, you know, you want to do this? And the funny thing about Chuck is he does not let you get away with texting him mm-hmm. a lot. He will call you, and which is very uncomfortable in this day and age, because you're so used to just being able to text people and
True
get
that.
Things done that way.
True that.
And he will not. He's awesome. I love Chuck because he will not let you get away with that bullshit. He'll call you, hey brother, how you doing? Like, and he'll talk your ear up, and he'll ask about your day, how everything's going. Like, you know what I mean? He doesn't do that. Like, oh yeah, we'll wrote them band so we can do this. Hey, we're friends. Let's talk for a little bit. And it really breaks you out of your bubble a little bit. So it was really an honor and a blessing to have him on this album, if for nothing more than just those forced conversations, you know, which I love. I love talking to him. He's a great guy and a good friend. And I just, it was awesome to have this opportunity to have him sing backups on this song because he's perfect for it. And also just to sort of touch base again, because a lot of times when you're in bands, no matter how close you are, you part ways for a while because you're both busy a lot. Mm-hmm. So you don't get to talk a lot. And he's really good at when you get that opportunity to talk, to take advantage of it and doesn't let you get away with bullshit.
Definitely. So any collaborations you'd love to happen at some point? Like if you could pick and choose, like, whatever artists out there, are there any names that you would love to collaborate with?
I don't know. I mean, I think that it would be cool to work with people that like who were big heroes in my youth coming up in punk, like Greg Graffin, mm-hmm. you know, would be awesome. That would be mind blowing. And yeah, I can't think off the top of my head other than him, you know.
but
I'm sure there's others out there. Yeah. I think that's, we can end it at that, because I mean that's the end all be all for me. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can relate to that. Yeah. So I mean, so obviously you have your heroes from back in the days, but you totally pass it on to the next generation. Like, how aware are you of the impact that you personally have had on the hardcore scene with your output? Like, I mean, say Boys That Fire were absolute pioneers for a style that kind of got worn down throughout the years mm-hmm. and copied by many bands out there.
Yeah.
What do you think of the hardcore mm-hmm. scene nowadays? And does it make you like proud to know that you could be the Greg Griffin for other generations?
I think it's awesome. I mean, I don't usually notice it until I play a show,
uh-huh.
and then because I'm so busy working and stuff. The beautiful part about it is when you get to play a show, and as you probably know, and most people know, that after I play, I make sure to spend time with the people who came to see me play.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't matter where I am, what's going on. I don't care if I'm playing to five people or 50,000. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Even at those huge festivals, I will get down and I will spend an hour, 2 hours talking to people. And that's because that's where you really get to hear that kind of stuff. And that's where you get to see it, what kind of impact you've had on people, and not just on that surface, hey man, you guys played some rockin' tunes. But but in the way that people will come up to you and they'll share their story, of how you affected them. And that's where it really makes that impact. And that's where you get the inspiration. That's why I've never understood when people just play a show and they leave. It weirds me out. Cause I'm like, wait, you're not hearing from them. They just had to hear you. Like, you know what I mean? You're not hearing from them. And how do you get inspired if you're not hearing? That's a huge inspiration for me.
Yeah.
And what I write and is to hear from people who are touched by what I do. And so that's when I get to notice those type of things. I normally don't. I'm so busy, you know, moving that I don't get to have that chance to go, wow, we really created something.
Oh, yeah.
I've really been a part of something here, you know? But it's in those moments where I get to finally kick back, hang out with some wonderful people and feel that impact
right
that I've made.
I suppose that a huge part of your successes is the fact that you never shy away from taking a stand, like making political and social statements, which are crystal clear, and literally pissing off people deliberately at some point.
Oh,
so
yes.
Is this something,
without a doubt.
Is that something you demand from artists in general? Or can you appreciate music which isn't political or edgy at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Like, I also, I think that I'm a little bit more hard stance about it right now because things in the world have gotten so gruesome at the moment that I find it difficult when someone who calls themselves an artist doesn't make a stand right now, because this is when we need music.
Yeah.
This is when we need artists to stand up. These are those times, these are those historical moments when artists need to make a stand.
Right.
But at the same time, I understand that it's not my band. You know, it's not my music.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no control over what other people do, and it's not really my place to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
So I try to shy off that a little bit and realize that, you know, when people tell me I'm not doing something right, my first reaction is usually, well, start your own band and do it right then, you know?
Yeah.
And I try to take that advice myself and be like, well, if I don't like what they're doing with their band, I'll do it right in my band.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And with what I do.
Right on. Now, obviously, the world is a fucked up place these days, and I kind of have the feeling that history sort of repeats itself and people are making the same bad decisions over and over again. Now, when reading your lyrics and your social statements, one gets the idea that you'd agree and you're furious and bitter at the same time. Is it hard for you to not get stuck in your own gears of resignation? Do you think that there's a chance of turning people's heads at some point? Do you think music can do that?
Oh, without a doubt. I think, you know, I think there was definitely a long time where I was just angry. And now I have anger with a purpose, and the anger that I put out, and even when I'm screwing with people a little bit, you know what I mean? And I'm trying to get people to think, I'm trying to shock people into thinking, because any of my anger anymore is enforced by love.
Right.
There's no bitterness there anymore. I'm not acting out. I'm not venting. I'm serious. You know, there is nothing when you have to hear of 2 to 4 year old immigrant children in a courtroom by themselves having to explain how horrible their life is through crayons. That's a reason to get angry.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. Like, the things going on these days and this lean in the world towards the right. I mean, I feel we're on the comeback now, but at the moment, this right-wing insurgence of ignorance and bitterness and fear and anger and hatred that just has taken over in a lot of ways. That's a reason.
Right.
You know, it's not just venting. It's not just being the protagonist or the antagonist to just be the antagonist, because that gets boring and that gets old. But you know, when you really delve into these things, when you see, and you know what, it comes a lot from experience too, of letting other people into your life, because as a white dude in this world, I don't have a lot of problems. I'm going to be honest with you.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think a lot of us need to understand that and to allow other people into our lives and to find friends and to find surroundings where maybe we aren't the majority.
Right.
We aren't the only voice speaking. Uh-huh. And every once in a while, shut the fuck up and listen to other people's experiences. And at that point, you can then learn how to help with their anger, with their hurt.
Right.
And take it on as your own and create a banner to the rest of the world that says, look, this is happening. Uh-huh. And we need to do something about it.
I see. Yeah, that's a nice way of looking at it. I went to a show of Thrice and Refused a couple of days ago, and Dennis from Refused said that Nazis use simple answers these days to complex questions and issues, and thus attract people. Now, your postings on Instagram are very well spoken and very detailed and distinct. Do you think you can reach out people, reach people to the same extent, but with a lot more content?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that if for nothing else, I think that my Instagram, and which has not always been the case. as people know, and I'm not afraid to, I do not shy away from this situation. I am very aware that at one point my social media was not the same.
Okay.
And it was actually a place where I created, because of a lot of anger that I had and a lot of fear that I had in myself, created a lot of animosity in the wrong direction.
Okay.
And a lot of people were offended. A lot of people were upset by it, and all the wrong people.
Okay, so you regret that? By it.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. I wish I could take it all back. I've created posts about it, actually apologizing, and saying that I was wrong.
Right.
And I think that's important.
Okay.
Is to realize when you're wrong and realize where that wrongness come. Not just that you're wrong, but realizing where it came from and how you're going to move forward to fix it.
Okay.
And to be different. And that's what I've really chosen to do, is to be different, is to change that trajectory.
Right.
And to realize that what I was saying before was acting out of fear. It was acting out of anger. Mm-hmm. As opposed to acting out of love,
right,
and care and compassion for those who needed it. And now I find that my social media presence is intended to be a safe place for those who need it, and a chaotic place for those who don't. You know? I hope to in some ways bully the bullies. While at the same time showing compassion and care towards those who, you know, need someone to stand up for them.
Right on. Now, talking about compassion and care and love, Oise and you have been friends forever. And he's the one running Antihits Records, and there's this tour coming up.
Yes.
When did you guys first meet? Do you trust him blindly when releasing on Antihits and all?
Yes. I haven't always, and it's funny because we've been through a lot together, and I haven't always because of my own issues, not his. He's always been there. He's always been great, but he had to deal with a lot with me over the years.
Okay.
And we talk about it sometimes. It's funny, but he's always been that friend and that even mentor at times.
Okay.
That sort of steers me in different directions. You know what I mean? Like sort of gives me the, dude, what are you doing? Stop. Like, you know what I mean? It was Oise that made me do this, this solo thing. I mean, it was, and I have nothing but, respect and love for him.
Right.
I remember the night very, very well when I wrote Echoes, and it was not something that I wanted to write. It just came out, and I sent it to Oise, got it first.
Okay.
And I was like, look, I'm thinking about doing this solo thing again. And this is the song that I'm going to start with. And I'm not sure about this. And he was like, oh yeah, you're doing this. And cool. It's like, and he set up the studio, all this stuff without, you know, like, it was really funny because he was like, no, you don't have a choice. You're going in this time. You're going in with Pete. You're doing this. And I'm not giving you enough time to build like a orchestra around it. You're just going to do it. You know,
is Oise lecturing you at times? Does it feel like that?
He's, Sorry, what? Cheering?
Does it feel like he's lecturing you at some times? Like
oh yeah, absolutely. And he's earned the right to. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things. He's one of those people that, like, over the years I've come to trust him implicitly. Uh-huh. And he's never steered me wrong. And he's just one of those friends who I trust with everything inside me.
So what are the fondest memories you have of Oiza on tour? Like are there like any exceptional
Every
moments?
Every goddamn day. It's like I remember, like, it's really funny because, like, in the beginning days of him coming out with Boy Sets Fire and, like, tour managing and stuff, he was always like, he's just always been that person that, like, when you needed to laugh, he was there.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, he's just saying some of the most insane shit, like, that would just get everybody laughing and put everybody in a better mood. Mm-hmm. He's also that person that he's the only one amongst the chaos of, especially Boy Sets Fire. I mean, I wouldn't wish his job on anyone. Like, God, Boy Sets Fire is a mess. You know what I mean? Like, we are, as people, I love those guys. They love me. We love each other dearly, but we are, it's like herding cats. Mm-hmm. Like, we're insane. And the reason the sound of Boy Sets Fire is so crazy is because we're all crazy. So, like, him playing Den Dad to all that has been amazing. He's literally the only one that can walk into the room and go, guys, now, right now, let's do this. And we actually listen, you know, like, yeah, yeah. It's crazy, right? Like, I don't know how he does it, but I think it's just, cause he's real.
It's,
you know what I mean?
Know,
like,
you know what, to my mind,
there's no pretense.
To my mind, it's that strict Bavarian tone.
Yes.
Well, anyway, well, I mean,
it commands attention.
Yeah. But speaking of tour story, here's my favorite question. It's sort of like on every episode of this End Hits podcast, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Please share your most embarrassing tour story if you can think of one.
Oh, no, you're out of your mind. I am not doing that.
This guy in Swain told me that his pants dropped down at some point on stage.
Oh my God. My embarrassing moments are never funny. I'm going to be honest with you. They're funny, like, as I say that, you know, but like, no, you're no way in hell I'm ever reciting those. Cause I don't have any, like, hilarious, like, embarrassing moments. They're all really awful. And, like, not anything anyway. It would be more like, oh, okay. Oh. It would not be a highlight, you know.
I see. Well, maybe that's maybe a theme for another book if you write another one.
Yes, without a doubt. Yeah, okay. A very long, depressing book.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. Now, I know you are a very grateful guy, like, very grateful for the exceptional life you get to lead. Like I can feel it, like, in everything, the way that you speak fondly of the people you meet, you speak fondly of the music that you create, you speak fondly of your family and blah, 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 blah. Now, is there ever stuff that gets on your nerves, like, in your daily life? What would you change if you could adjust, like, whatever, you know, just bits and pieces?
Well, as I said, as you said, and as I've said, gratitude is everything. But I would say that one of the things that sort of drives me nuts, and I try to take it with a grain of salt because it all comes along with what I've created, when people get a little too familiar and they get a little too pushy with that familiarity.
Right.
I've had people get in touch with me and ask me to, you know, hey, my girlfriend's having a birthday. Can you send a video? Sure, you know, whatever, that's fine. Like, hey, happy birthday. You know, it's a cool thing for them. But I've had people, like, I'll do that. And then they're like, ah, could you do it a little different? Could you do it this way?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me, dude? Come on.
Right.
Like, or the weirder situation is when people are like, my girlfriend left me. Can you help me get her back?
Oh, shit.
No. No, I absolutely cannot do that. That's gross. Please
Why?
Don't do that.
Come on, Nathan. Like, just be cool about this. Seriously, don't be such a dickhead.
Yeah, that is the word. Usually I try to give people advice in the realm of getting some help because that's not okay.
Oh, yeah.
To badger someone that's left you, let them go.
Right.
You know, if... And I think that that person, obviously they're hurting, obviously they're having a rough time. And I am definitely there in whatever capacity I can be,
okay,
to be a friend and just be, you know, someone they look up to and go, here's how you need to move in the opposite direction of what you're trying to do right now.
Right.
But that would be sort of a pet peeve when it's taken too far. You know what I mean? It's okay when fans get in touch and they're like, hey, can you do this for me? Because it'd be a big deal for my friend, or be a big deal for me. That's fine. But it's when people take it a little too far, or make it creepy, or make it weird, you know, where it's just like, you really didn't think this through before you said it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they, I think what it is, it's when people forget that you're also a human being.
Do you think people mistake the onstage Nathan with the real life Nathan? Is that like a different Nathan?
No, it's not different. And it's funny because it's not that they mistake that, it's that they mistake social cues in general.
Right.
You know, they mistake what's the right way to approach another human being. And what I normally try to do in that situation is sort of guide them in that. You know, I try not to be rude or mean, even if someone's being rude, to not give that rudeness back, to be like, come on, this isn't the way you want to go with this.
Okay.
Let me explain to you why this sort of hurts my feelings, honestly, mm-hmm, that you would think that this is okay to say to me.
Right.
And so I try to build that so that people can understand, and normally it works. Sometimes it doesn't, and people just get sort of pissed off that I won't do exactly what they want me to do at the moment they want me to do it.
Okay.
But that's life, you know? But I think that is also, like I said, I've created that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I have given that open.
Yeah.
So I can't really blame people for taking it when they, you know, but I do, but it does, if I could put anything out into the world, is to, when someone opens themselves up to you like that,
right,
respect it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And it's okay to get in touch. It's okay to say, hey, could you do this for me? Yeah, no problem. But be understanding and be like that this is another human being that you're asking a favor of.
Right.
You know?
Right. Now, I'm going to be really pissed off if you're not going to answer the quickfire round. I've rounded up for you next. So yeah, we're getting close to the end of this podcast, but I have a couple more stuff for you. So it's going to be a quickfire round where you have to just...
Okay.
Yeah, but you'll get the picture once we're there. So
yeah.
First question, scream for change or sing for change?
Sing.
All right. Talk to Nazis or punch them in the face?
Right in the fucking face.
Holidays in the sun or holidays in Cambodia?
Well, the sun.
All right. So big cities or countryside?
Countryside.
Right. And last but not least, entertainment or information?
Both.
Right. Nice.
If you don't mix them both, you really don't have much.
Right. Okay. Let's look into the future. Like in a couple of weeks' time, the Antis Records tour is going to come up. Do you know all the other artists on the bill?
Yes, I do.
Right.
I mean, I don't know Swain. I know their music.
Right.
So I say that because I a lot of times feel like I know an artist through their music. Mm-hmm. They could be totally different than what I've heard, but I do know Matsy very well. And Norbert Bookmacher, I toured with them.
Right.
And I will actually be using some of them as my backup
so
band.
So I heard.
Yep.
So do you fly in
but
for
Swain rehears- I haven't met, but I love their music.
Right.
So.
Yeah, they're brilliant. Do you fly in for rehearsals with Norbert Buchmacher's backing band for you? Or is how do you do that? Like, do you like arrange shit right before the tour with them and or are you open from input from them?
Anytime I get musicians, I make sure that they are people that are talented enough to figure it out on their own. So basically what happens is I send them the set list, I send them all the songs they need, and then I'll do, especially for just like the rhythms, because actually on this tour, I'm not going to be playing guitar.
Right.
I really want to move to the frontman position again, because that's what I shine at. I'm not a guitarist. So now that I don't have to, I'm not going to.
Right.
So I will sort of show them what I'm playing, and then get them in touch with, you know, whoever played bass on, Rakus played bass on the album, things like that, so they can work it out. Then what we do, they figure it out on their own. Then we have sort of like little email and phone meetings, and then we get together and we have 2 full days of rehearsal before the tour starts.
Right. Okay.
And that usually works it out. I mean, if you have good professional people, they are able to do it.
Definitely. I'm really, really looking forward to that, and I'll try to catch you guys in Cologne. So the final 2 questions for you. Question number one, nice. Do you think you've written your best song yet?
I hope not.
Right.
That would be awful.
Right.
I hope I've written great songs that people connect with and love, but I hope that, you know, my best song is yet to come.
Right.
Because otherwise I'd have no reason to keep going.
Right. What would you think is the song that you've written that sums up your life and views best at the moment?
I would say that my favorite song right now that I've written that I really can't wait to get out into the world is Never Alone.
All right.
And that, because it deals with the subjects of safe spaces. Uh-huh. And it's a in praise of safe spaces, because I think that more recently we've become so ironic in this world, and we've become so bitter to the idea that people need them, that people need a safe space to be, to recharge, to get back out into the world, which is obviously rough and awful at times. Yeah. How beautiful it is to have places. Isn't that why most of us got into punk rock and hardcore? To have a safe place.
Absolutely.
To be who we are.
Absolutely.
And that's, and it drives me nuts when people, you need a safe place? Yeah, I sure do. We all do, and so do you. And the only reason you're making fun of it is because you're angry and you're bitter and you're scared and you need a safe space.
That's a very, very nice thing to say at the end of this podcast. So, yeah. So, final question. How long do you think you can keep going without sleep?
I've tried a few days. It usually doesn't end up very well at the end of the day. So I do put a little sleep in there, but it's funny. I don't know. I'm not really sure how it works. I've been told by a couple of people that I might have a few extra hours in my days that other people don't have. But I don't know.
Well, this has been fun, my friend. Thank you so much for being so open and taking the time and all.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'm going to send off the people in German now. If you want to stay in line and listen to that, you're very welcome. And I'll switch to German again. I'll see you in a couple of weeks in Cologne, and be safe, be good, and have a good day. And you wave hello to your family and whatnot.
I certainly will. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you so much. Und euch allen da draußen, vielen, vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Das war der erste Podcast von Endhits Records, die erste Episode. Es kommen noch 4 weitere. Als nächstes haben wir Matze Rossi im Programm. Wir werden ein bisschen was über Matze Rossi rausfinden, denn auch der ist zusammen mit Nathan Gray und Band, mit Norbert Buchmacher und mit Swain zusammen auf Tour. Das geht los am 14.02. In Berlin in der Columbia Theater. Dann geht das weiter über Münster, Köln, Frankfurt, Hamburg, Leipzig, Nürnberg, Wien, München, Zürich, Stuttgart und am Ende Saarbrücken am 25.02. Alles andere dazwischen. Seht euch das auf jeden Fall an, das wird eine spektakulär gute Sache. Spektakulär gut wäre auch, wenn ihr das hier alles abonniert, und zwar auf Spotify, Apple, Deezer oder Podigy, wo auch immer ihr euch so einen Podcast mit mir freiwillig anhören mögt. Schickt uns bitte auch Feedback auf Endhits Records Facebook und Insta, schickt uns da Comments oder was weiß ich was, oder vielleicht auch mal Rauchzeichen oder sowas, das wäre auch mal oldschool. Ich heiße Ingo, ich mache den Gesang für den Donuts, und das hat mir mehr Spaß gemacht als neulich, als bei mir am Haus, vorm Haus direkt etwas kaputt gegangen ist. Ich bin gerade völlig abgelenkt, da läuft gerade wirklich was draußen. Irgendwas ist kaputt. Ich gucke jetzt mal aus dem Fenster. Bis bald. Tschüss.